It's time to head out on the front porch on KFRM. Grab your favorite drink, sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation on the front porch.
Welcome to On the Front Porch. I'm Tamara Wallace, and I'm visiting with Allison Vera from Ansley, Nebraska. Allison is a painter, illustrator, writer, photographer, and teacher. She painted rural scenery live at the 2024 Commodity Classic in Houston, Texas. Allison was named Nebraska K-12 Art Educator of the Year through the Nebraska Art Teachers Association. Welcome to On the Front Porch, Allison.
Well, thank you, Tamara. I'm happy to be here.
And Allison, let's start at the beginning. Tell me about your childhood.
Sure. Well, I was a super rural Nebraska farm girl. I had three siblings, and we grew up in the middle of nowhere, basically a two-mile dead end to my parents' farm where they raised cows and corn mainly. And my dad, full-time farmer, and my mom was a stay-at-home mom. So we had best of all worlds. It was really fun.
Tell me about your elementary days.
Okay. Well, I guess you always kind of think about things that might link to your future. I remember one time in fifth grade, they said, draw a mural that you might enjoy or like to see, I don't know, anywhere. So I just pictured, a mural on my dad's barn. What would that look like? And I drew all these cows and bulls lined up at a feed bunk. And I ended up, in the future then, doing several murals. I suppose I've done five or six different murals now. And so it's just interesting to think back at the things that really stuck out. My teacher, though, that's one of the things that she showed my parents and was like, why is your daughter drawing these cows and bulls eating from a feed bunk? She thought that was kind of disturbing. And it's like, well, that's what I would see on the farm. If my dad was feeding cows, they'd rush over to the feed bunk and fill up. So that kind of connects to definitely dreamed of doing and what I was already kind of visualizing myself doing when I got older.
Tell me about high school.
Super small school. I went to Sumner Evil Miller. It's called SEM. I think I had FOMO before it was a real thing, which is fear of missing out. And so I wanted to do everything. So I was a cheerleader. I was in speech. I was in academic decathlon. I was on the quiz bowl team. I was on student council. And I played three sports. But my sports were volleyball, basketball. And when I was a sophomore, our school got men's golf. And I was like, so I could not run track and get to go golf every day. So that seemed too good to be true. So I was on the men's golf team. And it was all fun and games until some of the first meets. And there would be, 60, 80 guys there and me. And it was like, what did I do? It sounds great, but it was actually really embarrassing to be the only girl. And then once you got started golfing, it was fine. You're just with your group of three or four people. But it kind of reminds me of now when I paint live, kind of it's the same thing. It's like, what's going on over there? What's she doing? And it's a big attention getter. So I don't know, maybe that helped prepare me for my live paintings where there's a lot of attention and you kind of have to be on the spotlight's on you. I don't know, but it was kind of an interesting moment in high school, and to tell people, yeah, I played men's golf, and little 5'3", curly blonde-headed girl, and so it doesn't fit very well with what people visualize. Then the other thing that I absolutely loved about growing up was 4-H. So we showed calves. I did the normal, sewing and baking and trying all those things out, but then one of the things that I'm most thankful for was that my brothers had signed up for welding, and then I want to learn how to do that too. So I tried welding. My dad was I didn't realize until that point. My dad was a really good welder. He welded things for his farm, like he could make parts to be able to fix machinery or make it more functional. Uh-huh. And so he taught me, you know, the three basic lap weld, filled weld, butt weld, and put it on a display board. And that was one of my favorite moments in time, is that I was a state champion welder when, I don't know, I suppose I was about 12. It's just kind of another, like, people didn't expect it. So, and then it's just, like, being reflective, it's just interesting because now I teach welding in art. So kind of comes full circle, like, thanks, Dad. Like, you've helped me become a better art teacher because I'm able to teach the kids how you taught me to weld. So,
What are some of the things you've welded?
When I was growing up, it was very function-based. Like, my brothers and I, my dad had us weld together the stanchions for the calves at fair. But then when I went to college and I was able to take sculpture classes and realize you can weld for art, then that was the first thing I ever welded as a sculpture, was a full-size cow and calf. And it was just a blast. Like, I had a full-size scoop shovel incorporated in it. There was a little pink bike. You just went out to the local junkyard and picked pieces that kind of appealed to you, or you could kind of visualize, maybe this could be the calf's head, or this could be the backbone. And it's kind of like a gesture. Like, if it were a drawing, it would be the quick gesture drawing, but with metal. So that was, like, one of the times I felt like something clicked. I was like, this is amazing. This is so much fun. Using the machinery, you know, like connecting it to, like, oh, I know what this is. This is from a baler, and farmers and stuff have a lot of fun looking at it. Oh, that, look at that cog or that part from a combine. And so it's kind of like an I spy, but it also is like a really cool sculpture on its own.
So did your dad put you to work since you knew how to weld then?
Well, probably not as much as he should have. We were just, you know, all busy doing all the activities that are out there for kids, like youth sports and, like I said, 4-H, and probably not fair to parents these days because there's so many organizations and clubs that, like, your kids are off doing all those things instead of helping on the farm probably as much as they should. But, I mean, we did normal kid stuff, laid out pies and, you know, we'd have to help with cattle and stuff, but garden.
Tell us, Allison, what you did after high school.
Yeah, well, I wanted to get the heck out of Dodge. I wanted to go to New York or California and go to an art school there. But Concordia University in Seward, Nebraska, they had the flag, like their art program was just phenomenal, is phenomenal. And they offered me an art scholarship and a golf scholarship, and I just couldn't turn it down. So I ended up staying right in the middle of Nebraska. Didn't get the heck out of Dodge, but then I loved Concordia. I loved going to a Christian school and just meeting other people who share your views and just being surrounded by, like, even the professors, like, they infused Christianity into, like, every single class, and that was something that I really liked. It was not a typical college. Like, there were no parties. If there were, I wasn't invited to them, so, like, the drinking, that kind of thing, that was not their focus at all. So, yeah, I loved it. Just a great art program. And then in the summers, that's when I got to experience other places. I worked in the Adirondacks the first summer out of college in New York. I worked in New Jersey. Then I worked in Minneapolis. And then the next summer, I went back to the East Coast and worked in Alexandria, Virginia, just doing all kinds of different things. And the ironic thing is, like, that's what made me realize that I did want to be in the Midwest, because it's not the same out on the coast. It's like, it's a great experience for a little bit, but I don't know, when you're driving down the highway, there's no, like, oh, hi, like, the one-finger wave, or, you know, you don't know them at all, but you're just throwing out a couple of these, hello, and that's not an East Coast thing. It's more like you're being honked at when you're on the East Coast. Like, that's their hello. It's like, out of the way. So that was my experiences. That's what helped me realize that where I came from was a great place, and that's where I wanted to be, somewhere close by where I grew up.
What happened after college once you graduated?
It's more unconventional. So I just wanted to move to a big city, and my big city was Lincoln, not about 3 hours away from my family's farm. And I just wanted to be an artist, because people had always told me, oh, you can become a teacher and maybe you can do art on the side. And so I just wanted to be an artist. And I knew from college, the professors had told us only, depending on the economy, 4 to 6% of artists can make their living just making art. So that, you know, I was like, I want to prove them wrong. I want to just be an artist. So I went to Lincoln, had an apartment with a friend, and was working on getting my prints and paintings and galleries. And I met this really cool guy named Mark Selesky, and he worked with zoos. And he made these fiberglass cows that kids could milk. And these zoos, they knew, like, okay, this guy has these really cool cows. I wonder if he can get us this or this or this. And they would keep asking him, hey, can you give us this? And so he found me to make some of the sculptures so he could say yes. So one was, the first thing we made was a 14-foot caterpillar. So I just go out to, like, a Morton building, and you make it out of styrofoam, and then you put a layer of plaster on, and you sand it back down, and you put another layer of plaster on and sand it back down. And then there's this really super amazing, like, I'd say internationally known place in Gibbon, Nebraska, called Icon Poly, and they make your sculptures in fiberglass. So they make a positive, and then they of your sculpture. So, like, they're making the shell of it, then they'd cut it in half, and then they'd make a positive on the inside of that, and then they put it all together. And then I got to paint the caterpillars when they're done, once at the Lincoln Children's Zoo in front of the Butterfly Pavilion, and it's one that it seems like if a family goes there, for some reason, that's their photo spot, is all the kids jump on the caterpillar and they take their picture. It's in front of this gorgeous monarch butterfly mural, which I wish I did because it's gorgeous. But it's a monarch caterpillar, so it's all tied together really nicely at the Lincoln Children's Zoo. Then they made another one for the Blank Park Zoo in Indiana, and I think there's one at Valla's Pumpkin Patch. There is one in Gretna. So there's a few of them. Another sculpture we made was a Galapagos Islands tortoise shell, and we made it to tie the size of the largest one ever recorded, and kids could get inside the shell and feel like they were the turtle. The crazy thing about that one is that it actually, about 3 days after it was done, it flew away in a tornado and was never seen again. So then my boss, he had me do a small one in clay, and he found a company that could just blow it up with, like, 3D scans. Got to do that one twice. That was just insane. Like, it's gone.
I'm Tamara Wallace talking with Allison Vera from Ansley, Nebraska. We have learned about her growing up. We are going to take a short break. When we come back, we will learn about Allison working as a full-time artist. Back on the front porch, I'm Tamara Wallace visiting with Allison Vera from Ansley, Nebraska. We have learned about her growing up. Now we are going to learn about Allison's art business. Allison, I know you are a teacher as well. How did that come about?
Sure. So I was just mentioning that I felt like, well, I was making these sculptures for zoos, and I was making paintings and prints, and I was also doing this other thing, live paintings, which we can talk about later, because that's how I met you. And So I was working on these sculptures. I felt like I'd made it. I felt like I was doing what I thought I'd always wanted to do. And that was, I was a full-time artist. I did it. But I was super, I just was really reflective and realized I'm not happy. Like, sometimes your ideals, they change, and mine had certainly changed. I was alone all the time. So I wasn't married. I didn't have a roommate. I didn't have any kids yet. So I would just, I didn't have a TV because, you know, money. So I'd made it, but it wasn't the shiny, wonderful thing that I thought it would be. Like, I noticed my friends, they got to go on these things called vacations. I didn't have any money for a vacation. But the biggest thing was that I was just lonely. I'd be at home and I'd be working on my art, and I thought, you know, this is what I need to do. I need to dive in and only work on my art. And then I'd drive to this Morton building and I'd work on these sculptures. I'd drive home, I'd work on my art some more, or like maybe I'd, you know, go out. But when I realized that when I was talking to my friends, I would say, well, Gary on Froggy 98, he said, and I was only quoting like radio people because that was my life, as I would listen to the radio as I worked. And so I realized I was really lonely. I wasn't happy. So I was through this, I was working with youth literacy a little bit in Lincoln, and we would read a story and the kids would do a project. And when they would show me their artwork at the end, I loved it. I was in love with the children's art. They would show me something that they created, and they would change perspectives from a bird's eye to like more of a landscape view, changing perspective all the time. And it was just like to see the world through their creations. I just loved, loved, loved their art. So I had the idea that if I went back to school, somebody had told me one time, if you, you know, go back to a pro, if you finish a program, make sure that there's three different things you can do. But if I get my art teaching certificate and master's at the same time, maybe I could work in an extension office. Maybe I could teach at junior college someday, because I definitely didn't think I would like teaching art in a classroom. Well, that's what I do now, is I teach at Litchfield Public Schools in Nebraska, and I teach preschool through 12th graders, and I love it. I love teaching. I love being around all ages. You know, the kids fill you full of lots of, like, oh, I love your hair. Your shoes are cute. You know, lots of warm fuzzies. And then the high schoolers come in, and they can do this, you know, they can get out their own materials and put it away, and they can do all these awesome works. They're all grown up. And so I like, you know, being able to talk to them about their projects and give them ideas and feedback. So I love that, but then I can still be an artist and do things like the Commodity Classic and be like, I'm still an artist. It's okay. But I'm not lonely. I'm very happy. So my ideals changed. And, you know, when you're a kid and somebody tells you you can be a teacher and you're in school, that's like the lamest thing they could say to you, because teachers are lame. So I didn't want to do that then. And then I found out, you know, having summers off to be able to work on your own projects and your own ideas, that's a pretty good gig.
You kind of get the best of both worlds there.
Absolutely, yeah.
Tell us about the commission work you do.
That's something I got asked a lot when I painted at the Commodity Classic. So do you do ideas? If somebody wants you to paint something, will you paint it? It's like, yeah. Yeah, that's one of the main things. Like, that's, you know, every artist likes commissions, generalizing, but more than, let me just put some things in a gallery and see who wants it. Like, if you get a commission, that's a guaranteed thing. Like, they're telling you what they want, you're telling them a price, then you can work on it. You don't have the, you know, you don't have to frame it, which costs money. And galleries charge a 40% commission at least. So you sell something, you're excited, and then you realize that you only get this little side bit of money. Mm. So a commission is, that's the dream, is that somebody comes to you and they say, I want this. But my favorite thing to do is if I can do a commission for someone that I know, or I can kind of get to know them before I paint it. You know, what do you do? And, like, paying attention to their favorite colors, or, like, what are they wearing? Like, what's their style? Are they somebody who likes symmetry? There's just certain personality types that, like, somebody maybe who does, this is an overgeneralization, but if somebody is, like, a math person, they're going to want it usually to be more representational, mm-hmm. more realistic. Mm-hmm. And that could be, like, you can find a math person who likes non-objective or abstract, but they might want calm colors that, you know, they want it to look mm-hmm. correct. And then there's other people who are, they can handle more abstract. So finding that, like, their abstraction threshold, I guess, is fun for me. And then finding the, like, the colors and the, like, are they going to be okay with seeing brush strokes? Are they going to like that? Or, like, rich texture? Or are they the type that's going to want to be very, very flat and, yeah, just be able to predict them more? So it's just fun to kind of match up a commission with the way that I think they would really, really, really want a painting. And then, like, there's, it seems like commissions are usually like somebody's really thought about what does this person want, and then I get to help them bring it to life. And that is so much fun. Usually, I mean, tears are a very regular result, because especially the person who ordered the commission has really, you know, ordered something for them that it's not from a big box store. This is something personal, and it's a one-time gift, and it's a mm-hmm. there's only one, and it was specially made for them. So commissions are, there's a really, really wonderful thing that I get to do to help with, and I enjoy matching it to what I think they're really going to love.
And Allison, you do live paintings and time-lapse paintings, but can you tell us about the live paintings, a little more about that and what that means?
Absolutely. So this is probably one of the funnier, like, how'd I get here? So I had mentioned it to my pastor once. I was like, yeah, you know when people, like, do, like, chalk drawings or paint on stage? I think I could do that. And literally that week, I was thinking, like, you know, in the next year, if some creative endeavor comes up, keep me in mind. Well, that week, he had me come to a meeting with a foundation president, and they're like, he said, we're going to pay Allison $100 a week to paint in church. And I think they had a sermon series, and it worked in. And so I painted in church for $100, and I was like, sweet, I'm getting paid to go to church. You know, it doesn't happen all the time. That was pretty good. That was my first life painting. And then the way my experience was, people would find you online. They'd see that you're an artist who lives in Lincoln, and they would say, hey, can you donate something to this gala we're going to have? And I did that a few times. They said, oh, this will get your name out there. Like, basically, you should thank us. And I never heard back from them. I donated a couple pieces. Keep in mind, I'm a starving artist, and I donated a piece. I would never hear back, like, how'd it do, or how much it make, and nobody would ever, like, oh, I need to track down this artist and get more art from her. It just didn't work like that, you know? So when people would ask, can you donate a piece of art, complete strangers, you know, I would say, well, what I can do is I can do this live painting, and it really is, like, plus, 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 because I do a live painting, and I start with a blank canvas, and a lot of times it's a gala, so people come about five, and then I start painting, they look at the silent auctions, they sit down, they have a meal, there's a speaker, and then my painting is usually one of the last items on the live auction, and then I get a percentage of what the painting goes for, and through watching it develop from blank canvas to more of a, you know, to a completely finished work of art, people kind of connect to it. They connect to the experience that they're having. Like, They had a great time at the gala. They watched the painting progress, and they bid on it. And you know, I've had them go for $5,000 to $7,000, and so then I get some, they get some, and there's no risk to the gala. They get a performance, and they get, you know, a percentage of the painting. So there's no risk, no cost to them. And then, however, like, I find it as a fun challenge, because the better I do on the painting, in theory, the more I would make as well. An all-win situation, in my opinion. So that's the standard. But then I have had more people saying, can you just come paint? Like, I did a painting for Kappa at their shareholder meeting, and they just want a flat rate. They just want, you know, and they want the painting, and they want a flat rate. And so that's fine too. And that's more, so Renovo Seed is the one that contracted me for the Commodity Classic.
Uh-huh.
So we designed a painting that would include their cover crops. So we did, like, we figured out the background, and that was a field with their cover crop, their tri-blend of radishes, turnips, and rapeseed. And then it was, they wanted some black Angus cows in there. So we'd find, like, the guys that work there, we'd make sure we found really nice looking black Angus, all different positions and angles and stuff. And so that was the second painting I did. The Kamai Classic was kind of tying everything into Renovo's cover crops, forage crops, their native seeds, and conservation seeds and stuff. So, yeah, it was really fun to kind of tie it all together. Renovo, like they said, pencil us in for next year, because they really thought that, they said nothing brings people into a booth like a live painting. Right. I don't know what it is. Like, I wonder if people just connect with their younger child and, like, oh, painting. I liked painting when I was in third grade.
I'm Tamara Wallace talking with Allison Vera from Ansley, Nebraska. We have learned about Allison's art that she has done as a full-time artist. And on that note, we're going to take a short break. We will be right back. We will have more art that she does and how much she loves art. I'm Tamara Wallace visiting with Allison Vera from Ansley, Nebraska. We have learned about Allison's art that she does and how much she loves art as a full-time artist. Allison, tell us what forms of art you do.
Okay, well, so first of all, you know that I love to paint. Like, I've done, because I met you doing a live painting at the Kamai Classic, and I've done several murals, so I love, love, love painting. But I also really felt like things clicked when I discovered sculpture in college, and I was able to weld, you know, different pieces of farm machinery and junk and crazy stuff to make anything. You know, that was a blast. But, you know, artists, we just love to experiment in general. I don't mean to paint everybody with the same paintbrush, but, you know, we just like to experiment. So I, you know, I like ceramics and printmaking, and yeah, I like it all, honestly. Photography. So, yeah. Anything.
Tell us the process you would take, like, of painting a cow standing in a pasture.
Sure. Well, that's a good question. So I think there's two different types of artists. Maybe there's another one I'm thinking of, but some artists just like to sit down and start creating and see where it takes them, and then they just keep working and working until they like it. And that's called a process artist. And I would consider myself more of a process artist, kind of more like, oh, I'm going to try this over here. Oh, I like that. I don't like that. I like this little part. I'm going to paint over this. I'm going to add more over here. And then there's a different type of artist that has a vision of exactly what it's going to look like before they start. Mm-hmm. And I'm not that one. I don't know. I think it's more, I think it's boring if I know, like, okay, it has to look like this. I want to experiment and try things. So, like, at the Kamai Classic, I was cleaning out my purse just to, like, be simpler, and I found these old, like, Zoom membership cards or something. And I took those in, and I actually used that on the, I used it like a palette knife on the cow sculpture, sorry, on the cow painting on the sky for that. And just trying new things and seeing what textures it gives you. And even though, like, I'm in front of people and this has to turn out, I still like to experiment because I just have that process artist in me so strongly. I feel like it's like, I want to try this. Okay, this is boring. What can I try next? What texture? Like, a lot of times I'll flip the paintbrush around and I'll use the handle of the paintbrush for maybe little dots or to smear things, like, and just have an unpredicted texture or something on there. So, yeah, I just start. There's no, like, let's do the background first, then let's do the cows in the foreground over the background, or let's do the cows first and then surround the background. I just start, and I like to kind of keep it a surprise what it's going to look like at the end sometimes, but with cows, it's like, I got to get working on the cows. I have to make sure they look right, especially at, well, any time, but at the Commodity Classic, I just kept thinking, like, these people know ag. I was just guessing that, like, they all knew cows, too. You know, they know what this cow looks like, what it should look like. If I have something a little bit out of line, they're going to say, ooh, what's wrong with her hip? Like, she's crippled up, you know. So, and there was a really funny moment, in my opinion. When I was painting the first cow, I was looking at a picture of a cow, but you're gesturing it, and you're doing it live, and you're doing it quick, and I made her body a little bit too long. So when I was working from the front, making sure everything was right, and you kind of work with the negative shapes to kind of double-check yourself. So I painted in the all four legs exactly where they should be. Well, I already had her back leg in from when I painted her a little too long. So I immediately did the background stroke grass color over that last leg, because I did not need any farmers walking up and going, five-legged cow. So I was very self-conscious about that moment. Like, okay, I got the cow right, but I need to cover up that fifth leg before anybody sees this.
You growing up on a farm, you know, that's helped you with drawing agriculture scenes. And
thank you. But I felt the opposite. Well, I felt that way when I was flying out there. But then, like, the very first person I sat by on the plane was telling me all about carbon positive, carbon negative, and just all the different things that are going on in ag. And I thought, wow, I really don't know what I don't know. Like, even though I grew up in ag and I still live in the country and my kids still show beef, I felt like, wow, this Khmer Classic is intense. There's so much going on politically and just agriculturally. Like, I've never heard of canola. You know, and there were several booths with canola, and a couple people came up and wanted me to paint canola. And, you know, there's a whole world of ag out there that I am completely unfamiliar with. So that was really neat to be around all these ag people. They're such wonderful people. And just learning about all the up-and-coming issues and what people are concerned about right now. So lots of interesting stuff.
Tell us about your favorite painting.
I don't know that I have a favorite painting. I have a lot of favorite artists. Van Gogh and Monet, and I'm always teaching my kids about different artists, you know, as an art teacher. But it made me think this weekend, because a lot of people came up and said, oh, it must be Bob Ross's daughter. And that is really high praise, because he was universally loved. And I even think during COVID, he had, like, a comeback. Uh-huh. So he actually died in 1995, and I feel like he's more popular now than he ever has been. Like, everybody just adores him, and his paintings are fabulous. They're not, like, you know, no art teacher's really going to teach about them. But what I love about him is people remember the way that he made them feel. Like, he is always encouraging people that they can do it. And, like, he's always, you know, putting people at ease and relaxing people and telling people, like, And I was just reading about him, and people said in his classes that he made them feel like they had a spark, a light, that there was a talent in them. So from a teacher perspective, I adore that about him, that he made people believe in themselves and, you know, just had such a calming effect on people. And I mean, did a lot for art, honestly. Mm-hmm. They just love watching it happen. That's that's kind of what I do, you know, but mine's a lot less relaxing than his. But the value, I think, that he brought to art was phenomenal.
You're an illustrator writer. So tell us about your illustrator writer experience.
Sure. Well, I guess it all kind of started because I'm very competitive. I don't know. I've always been that way. I always wanted to beat my brothers at things in the nicest way. And so there's a lot of competitions for art students. So I would enter my students in all the competitions, and they would win, and it was awesome. So I've had three kids win first place in the Congressional Art Competition, which means they win two tickets to Washington, D.C. Their art is on display in the congressional tunnels. So, okay. And then for Scholastics, I've had kids win that. There used to be a competition where they could win $1,000 if they got their artwork in a calendar, and that went to like a scholarship for college. It's called a NEST fund. And anyway, so I had like seven kids from where I teach win this scholarship. And I think that's when they kind of stopped it, because they're like, Litchfield's just taking all the money. Like, let's discontinue this calendar idea, because I feel like we kind of took over. But so my kids would do really well, and I just felt like that's half of it. But the other half is, like, people need to know. So I started writing stories about my kids and taking a picture, and it was just so fun to see it in the paper. So then I would start writing other guest editorials. One I wrote was about my grandma. She went to the same beautician for 50 years. It was just such a fun story. She wouldn't go anywhere else. She was very loyal, and she said, nobody can do it like Marilyn. So that's another story I wrote. So then kind of the next step for me, in my opinion, is I really want to do children's books. So I've written a couple, and it's the perfect marriage of, like, being an artist, being a writer, is, you know, telling the story together. And they're, like, it's not like, oh, write a story, add pictures, you know, with the children's books. They're just so together. So I'm like, oh, I can't wait to do this. But it just takes time. So I want to, you know, get an agent and have them sell my books, not just, like, self-publish, because, yeah, I don't know. So that's my next challenge for myself. I would really like to do that. And like I said, several stories, and they kind of relate to teaching art. One is a fractured fairy tale where a wolf is trying to apologize to Little Red Riding Hood. Well, he makes her a pie, and he uses red berries, yellow lemons, and blueberries, and he puts them in the oven, and it comes out, and it looks like a rainbow, because, of course, those were the primary colors, and he thinks it's ruined, and so he apologizes, and we'll find out if she accepts his apology or not. But it's called Apology Pie, the Magic Apology. Primary Pie, the Magic Apology. So, yeah, that's kind of my next dream, is to publish children's.
I'm Tamara Wallace, talking with Allison Vera from Ansley, Nebraska, and we have learned about a recent experience where she painted live at an event at the Commodity Classic, and more about her love for the arts. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we will learn about her career as an art teacher. Back on the front porch, I'm Tamara Wallace, visiting with Allison Vera from Ansley, Nebraska. We have learned about her recent experience at the Commodity Classic, where she painted live, and more about her love for the arts. And now we are going to find out about Allison's career as an art teacher and about her awards that she won as a teacher. Tell us about your career as an art teacher.
Sure. So definitely never wanted to be an art teacher and became an art teacher and absolutely love it. And yeah, I guess what I really love is what I, you know, just watching my kids succeed and then being able to brag about them and write stories about them, really highlighting their successes so everybody can know, like, this kid did this, like, they won this award. And, you know, anytime you have an award like that, that's something that, I don't know, I've noticed that people tend to remember forever, that it's like a feather in their cap, like, oh, I remember one time in third grade, I won this coloring contest. Like, all people will tell me things similar to that because it sticks with them. So that's what I want to do for my kids. I want to give them as many opportunities as they can to shine. And then after they shine, then I really want to shine the light on them through, you know, sending it out to papers and radio and just bragging on them and saying, like, you know, look what they did. This is amazing. They created this. They won this award. They won a trip to Washington, D.C. They got to meet our congressman. He came to our school because of this kid's art, you know, and that's just been so rewarding for me to be able to give them, like, the spotlight. It just never gets old.
And tell us about the art mediums you teach. I know you teach from preschool through 12th grade, so I'm sure there's a very large list. can you tell us about the sure. those kinds of things that you teach?
Sure. Yeah, so preschool, like, you know, you're keeping things a little bit simpler, but they, I mean, all ages love to paint. So I make sure, even though we make messes, we are doing paint and clay every single year. Then moving up, you know, high school, I get to do more finished, more advanced medium. The most unique medium that I get to teach is welding. And, you know, because, like I told you earlier, my dad taught me to weld. Mm-hmm. And now I get to teach kids to weld. And we go out to this guy, his name is John Coles. We go out to his wonderful metal piles. And these kids have an idea of what they want to make. And this year we did critters, basically, was the theme. So one girl did a chameleon. Another kid did a horned lizard. Another girl did a butterfly. So, and then they can use a plasma cutter to cut the pieces into the exact shapes they want. I really encourage them to do as little of that as possible just so we can move the project along. You know, just as few welds as possible. But then we come back and we weld it together. We usually use mostly a wire welder just because it's just a lot simpler than an arc welder or stick welder. It's kind of more of a skill to learn to use the stick welder. So we use the wire welder, and they make these amazing sculptures. And, like, for me, I wasn't really given free rein. I just didn't even think it, like, was okay to make sculptures until I was in college and then, you know, hey, make a sculpture. And then, you know, I made that full-size cow and calf sculpture out of metal. So giving these kids, they're very rural kids, a lot of them have a welder at home, but they've never kind of been told, you can make art. Oh, see those scraps over there? You can take them, and if you're, you know, you can visualize something, it's okay to use that metal and make something amazing with it. So those sculptures are the ones that have done the best for my school. They've gone to state visual art, it's called Scholastics, and some of them have gone on to nationals, which means they're on display at Carnegie Hall in New York City, and they get these huge silver medals or gold medals when they do well at nationals. So, I mean, this artwork is appreciated by people around the U.S. just because it's so unique. Like, they're using rusted wrenches and cogs and sprockets and, oh, things. I mean, there's just all kinds of awesome metal around rural Nebraska because there's old machinery and pieces, and we work with this guy, and, you know, he just lets the kids have it. So it's like a free medium. Like, we don't have to buy a canvas. We don't have to go buy paint. We don't need paintbrushes. We just need the metal and a welder and their imagination. So those are the absolute most unique things. But I teach ceramics and, you know, printmaking and watercolor. That's kind of what, you know, it's kind of what all art teachers do. We kind of like music teachers. They play all instruments. You know, they can teach all instruments. Like, they teach all art teachers be able to teach everything. Of course, I think we all end up with a forte, and that usually shows through what our kids especially excel at.
And tell us about winning the Nebraska Art Teacher Award. That was amazing.
Well, it was just one of the best days, you know, and it was mostly just because my parents were there, my husband was there, my really good friend Kala Sawyer was there, and so basically I told my husband, it's like the Academy Awards, but for art teachers. So then what I did, I had to give an acceptance speech, and I listed, you know, how they thank everybody on the award show. So I just went through and I was like, thank you, Mrs. Beike, Mr. Wagner, Mrs. Weiss, Professor Bockelman, Professor Soloway, Professor Wolfram. And I went through the entire list of every single art teacher I'd ever had. And it really actually made a point to myself about the quality of art teachers that I have always had. And that just says a lot for our public school systems. Like, I think it's hard for us to understand why people would send their kids to a private school on the coast, because we have such phenomenal public schools right here. Mm-hmm. So.
And how can someone get a hold of you, Allison?
Probably the easiest way. I'm always putting things on Facebook. I have a page just for my art, and it's called Allison Vera Studio. So two L's. And then Vera, like Sarah with a V. So Allison Vera Studio. And that's just on Facebook. And there's a picture of me painting at a wedding. And background's probably something in ag. And, yeah, my email's on there, or message me through Facebook. Anything's great. I'd love to hear any ideas that people have, or ideas for commissions, or to just have a conversation. That'd be amazing.
Right. You can go to events, and, you know, if people wanted to have you there, you know, groups or associations, or and you've got that agriculture background, and like you were at Commodity Classic, you would be a good candidate to have for an event for agriculture related.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. It was very fun with Commodity. It's been great talking with you tomorrow.
And Tamara Wallace here on the front porch talking with Allison Vera from Ansley, Nebraska. And we have learned about how much Allison loves art. I have had the most pleasure speaking with Allison. And so thank you, Allison, for joining us for On the Front Porch, and to all who joined our conversation.